Hello, and welcome to Discussions with DPIC. I'm Anne Holsinger, Managing Director of the Death Penalty Information Center. Our guest today is John Bessler, professor at University of Baltimore School of Law. He's authored several books on the death penalty, including his 2023 book, The Death Penalty's Denial of Fundamental Human Rights, International Law, State Practice, and the Emerging Abolitionist Norm. And he has lectured internationally. Thank you for joining us, Professor Bessler.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to start by talking a little bit about your most recent book, where you make an argument for classifying the death penalty as torture, which, if accepted, would violate international law. Could you explain why you think the death penalty is torture?
Yeah. Let me begin by just talking about what the death penalty really is in reality. And that is that the death penalty is really just a series of credible death threats. So if you have a capital charge, that's a death threat. If you have a death sentence, that's just a more credible death threat. And then, of course, if you have an execution in the period leading up to the execution, that also constitutes a very imminent death threat. And there's been already in international law, there's much commentary about how mock executions, or what we call simulated executions, are already considered a classic example of psychological torture. And the UN Convention Against Torture, which the U.S. actually has ratified, prohibits both physical and mental forms of torture. And so I think if you think about what the death penalty is, it's really just sort of a mock execution in some cases where they actually carry it out. So it's actually more severe. And so for that reason, I think that the death penalty should be classified as torture under international law. Just as, you know, we don't allow in the law if there's death threats made in, for example, the context of interrogations, we say that those confessions are coerced and should not be admitted into evidence. And the U.S. law actually already prohibits the use of mock executions. So given our commitment to the UN Convention Against Torture and our commitment to rid ourselves of using torturous practices, I think the death penalty should be classified as such.
Why do you think it's important to recognize the death penalty as torture? And what effect would that recognition have in the U.S. where international laws and norms are often disregarded?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to stigmatize the practice. I know that the Death Penalty Information Center has been releasing information, as they do regularly and periodically, about the number of states that actually use executions, use the death penalty. And the number of states that use the death penalty has been declining. And most executions around the world take place in places like China, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia. And I don't think the U.S. should be on that list of countries. We want to have the ability, when we talk about executions abroad, to really have better standing in the world to talk about this as a human rights abuse. And so I think for that reason, it should be classified as torture is already prohibited under international law, under the highest norm. We call that a jus cogens norm prohibiting torture. And I think that the death penalty has just been misclassified in the past and should be classified under that rubric of torture.
Is there any legal precedent domestically for courts to conclude that the death penalty constitutes torture?
Yeah, there actually, if you actually look at the law, the development of the law, there is really, although the U.S. Supreme Court, of course, in most recently has decided the death penalty should not be classified even as cruel and unusual punishment. But let me take you a step back to the earlier case law that the U.S. Supreme Court decided. And there's cases where, ironically, the U.S. Supreme Court approved the death penalty, but they said that the Eighth Amendment actually prohibits torture. And so if we look back at cases like Wilkerson versus Utah, that's from the late 1870s, and In re Kimmler, which approved the use of the electric chair in 1890, that case also said that the Eighth Amendment prohibits torture. But the U.S. Supreme Court has just failed to consider the modern definition of torture, which has developed since the Holocaust, since the Nazi atrocities, and since World War II. And so if you think about what happened after World War II, right, we had the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948. And then we have Germany, for example, declared in its constitution the death penalty was abolished in 1949. In the Third Geneva Convention in 1949, which protects POWs, prohibited both mental and physical torture. And so this U.S. Supreme Court has already said that the Eighth Amendment bars torture through the Eighth Amendment, but they just haven't considered the mental aspect of torture. So they've missed kind of half the equation. They've only focused on the narrow question of whether there be physically excruciating pain. at the moment of death during an actual execution. And if you look back at history, back in 1972, of course, in Furman versus Georgia, the U.S. Supreme Court did, for a period of time, declare the death penalty to be a violation of the Cruel and Unusual Punishments Clause of the Eighth Amendment. And just shortly before that, in a case called People versus Anderson, the California Supreme Court actually used the language of psychological torture to refer to the death penalty. And in the Furman versus Georgia case, the Supreme Court actually more than 50 times used the language of torture, but just didn't classify the death penalty as torture. And then if we look at other cases that have been more recent, there's a whole line of cases in a death penalty state, Alabama, which defines psychological torture in the non-state actor context as making someone aware of their impending death and that person then being helpless to prevent their death. And so if you apply that exact same definition to people on death row, you would conclude under principles of universal human rights and the idea of the rule of law, which says that the laws have to apply to everybody, including government officials, that the death penalty should be classified as torture. But most recently, there was a case actually in Idaho, a federal judge ruling on a motion to dismiss. It was not addressing the merits of the issue, but decided the Eighth Amendment claim of a death row inmate could go forward in a case called Pizzuto versus Tewalt. And that was just earlier this year. And basically what was happening is Idaho was scheduling executions without necessarily having the drugs to carry out those executions. And so the judge determined that that claim could at least go forward past the motion to dismiss stage and use the language of psychological torture in that case. So I think, there are precedents, certainly, that talk about torture, but the Supreme Court just hasn't to date applied the concept of psychological torture to the death penalty. And I think if they do so, they'd be forced to confront some of these issues.
I'm glad that you brought up some of the court decisions because I wanted to talk a little bit about due process. In recent years, it's become increasingly difficult for death sentenced prisoners to secure relief from federal courts, even in cases involving credible innocence claims. Do you think that this erosion of due process fits into your theory that the death penalty is torture?
Yeah, I do. I think the book is really about the idea of universal human rights. And of course, the concept of due process is an ancient one, a longstanding one. You can go all the way back to the Magna Carta in 1215. You have in English law, they use the term law of the land. We use the term due process in American law. We have two due process clauses in the U.S. Constitution. We have the Fifth Amendment that guarantees due process at the federal level. And we have the due process clause in the 14th Amendment, which protects people against due process violations from the states. And of course, the 14th Amendment also includes in a very important provision, the Equal Protection Clause. And that clause, I think, is important to think about in terms of universal human rights, because due process is also a universal human right. We have protections for due process. We find it in international conventions. And it's important to the process be fair. But my point is that even if you could make an execution, you could guarantee that it would be physically pain-free at the moment of death, there's really no way to eliminate the psychological torment that's associated with scheduling somebody's death and then subjecting them to that sort of continuous threat of death during the entire process. And so, unlike back in the 18th century when the Constitution was put in place, the average time where people would spend between sentencing and execution might range from like 1 month to 3 months. And now we have the average being about 20 years where people are subjected to this threat of death for really 2 decades. And so because you can't eliminate the psychological torment that's associated with the death penalty, the use of capital punishment, it's for that reason that I think we really need to consider thinking about classifying the death penalty as torture, not only under international law, but also under domestic law.
This year and last year, the global execution total has risen due to increased use in a small number of countries, even as many other countries are moving towards abolition. So just to give a couple of examples for our listeners, earlier this year, Ghana abolished the death penalty and Malaysia eliminated the mandatory death penalty for 11 offenses. How would you describe the current state of capital punishment on the global stage? And why do you think the U.S. remains a retentionist country?
Well, I think to answer the last question first, I think part of it is our system of federalism, right? So we have not just one system of government, but we have the federal government. We also have the governments of all the states, and we have governments in the territories. And so it's difficult to unless the U.S. Supreme Court weighs in on this, that's really the only clean way to get rid of the death penalty. We've seen a lot of activity at the state level. States have either declared the death penalty unconstitutional through judicial decision, as happened in Connecticut in a case called State versus Santiago. Other states abolished the death penalty legislatively. But at the international level, the U.S. is becoming increasingly isolated in the international community. Every 3 years, there's a World Congress against the death penalty. If we look at what's actually happening internationally, we now have 90 countries that have signed what's called the second optional protocol to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. That's also a covenant the U.S. has actually ratified. But we submitted reservations to it to allow the U.S. to continue using the death penalty. But if you look at actually what's happened internationally, you know, those 90 countries have committed to abolishing the death penalty. We've had more than 120 countries go to the UN and say that they want a global moratorium on the death penalty. That's something the U.S. actually did not vote for. But again, we're becoming increasingly isolated because we're in the minority position now on the death penalty. So I think if we look at what's happening globally, there's a growing awareness of thinking about the death penalty as a human rights violation. And we need to get ahead of this when we have countries like Mongolia, other places around the world that have abolished the death penalty. We're really, really behind the times, especially when you look at the countries that use the death penalty still. They tend to fall into that autocratic, totalitarian kind of grouping of countries that do not respect human rights sort of writ large. And so we really need to, I think, refocus our attention on this issue.
So we will be releasing this podcast in conjunction with International Human Rights Day on December 10th. And you've mentioned how the death penalty is often framed or discussed as a human rights issue on the international level. But in the United States, it's primarily seen as a criminal justice issue rather than a human rights issue. Do you agree with that framing? And why or why not?
Well, I think we really do need to think about it now as a human rights issue squarely. And let me give you a couple of examples. In Europe, for example, which again, we had the Nazi atrocities, the Holocaust. We had the convention there that was the European Convention on Human Rights was passed in the wake of World War II. That allowed for the death penalty at the time, back in the 1950s. But when we move up to a couple of protocols, we had Protocol Number 6 and Protocol 13 to that European Convention. The first protocol, Protocol 6, declared that the death penalty should not be used in peacetime. And then in Protocol 13, Europeans decided that they were not going to allow the death penalty even in wartime. So there's been an absolute prohibition of the death penalty in Europe. And in the American system, we have the American Convention on Human Rights, which actually there's a provision in there that says that once a country abolishes the death penalty, they agree not to bring it back. And so abolition effectively in the Americas is a one-way street. You're moving towards abolition. And even though there's a provision in the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, Article 6, that purports to allow the death penalty for the most serious crimes, there's also a provision in that International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights that has an absolute prohibition against torture. And my personal opinion is you just can't square those two. You cannot both allow the death penalty and then outlaw torture absolutely, because the death penalty by nature, an immutable characteristic of the death penalty, is it makes use of credible death threats of the kind that ordinarily would be classified as not only tortious, that is that they could be the subject of like a claim for intentional infliction of emotional distress, but also torturous. And actually, if you think about it, death threats are ordinarily considered criminal acts. These are acts that are punishable under the criminal law. And so the idea of the rule of law, of course, is that everybody will be subject to the same laws. And so government officials should not be allowed to use credible death threats in a system, in an organized criminal justice system. And so I know there's been a lot of talk about, well, is the death penalty deterrent or not? If you look at the statistics, the death penalty states on average have higher homicide rates than non-death penalty states. So I don't think that's really can be a focus of the discussion around the abolition of the death penalty. And so I do think we need to look at it squarely through a human rights lens. And one thing I would just say finally is that the idea of human dignity is one that we need to think about as well. There was actually a case when Justice Harry Blackmun was on the Eighth Circuit as a judge in the Eighth Circuit. He wrote an opinion called Jackson versus Bishop in 1968. And that case declared the use of lashing prisoners within Arkansas prisons to be a violation of the cruel and unusual punishments clause. So he was talking about a non-lethal corporal punishment. And he said that that punishment was degrading both to the person being punished, but also to the punisher. And if we think about the death penalty is just more severe than a non-lethal corporal punishment. So it's an ironic situation that the judicial decisions of the United States already say that you cannot use non-lethal corporal punishments, yet we still have this lethal punishment kind of hanging out there being used quite rarely, actually, in the United States at this point.
The United States is among a small number of retentionist countries globally. When you've lectured internationally about the death penalty, how do international audiences react to the fact that the U.S. continues to use the death penalty?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, when you talk to people in other countries, a lot of countries, including in Europe, actually will refuse to extradite people to the United States if there would be a prospect of that individual facing the death penalty. So I think that kind of says it all in a way about the views in other places about the death penalty. And again, because of that trend I talked about where we're seeing more and more countries abolish the death penalty, more and more countries join every couple of years the UN resolution to call for a global moratorium on the death penalty, I think that's significant. And something as a country that wants to be a leader in the international community that we need to pay attention to. I was at an event actually in Germany recently and had a chance to hear the former president of Mongolia, which again, I mentioned they had abolished the death penalty. And he talked about when he became president facing a choice, he could either sign death warrants or he could sign commutations of death sentences. And he chose the latter. He chose to commute those death sentences and to join really the international community in getting rid of the death penalty. And actually, when you get rid of the death penalty, it opens up conversations about other things in the criminal justice system, which are very pressing, which we need to talk about, including racial discrimination.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I think one last point I think would be that change takes time and the law changes and it evolves over time, but it does so oftentimes slowly and in fits and starts. And so it's important to remember that even though I've been advocating against the death penalty for more than three decades, that progress sometimes is slow. We no longer have juvenile executions in the United States. The U.S. Supreme Court declared those to be unconstitutional. We've seen some states abolish the death penalty, but we still have more work to do. And I think one of the things that, as I've looked at this issue, you really cannot separate the issue of the death penalty from racial discrimination. The death penalty was often used in the founding era of our country to put down rebellions of those individuals who were enslaved. That happened in Virginia, for example, in 1800 with what was known as Gabriel's Rebellion. And if you look at the first Civil Rights Act that Congress passed, that was in 1866. And that Civil Rights Act requires like punishments for people of different races. And unfortunately, we just never achieved that result. So again, the right to be free from discrimination is also one of those universal human rights that we find in international law. And again, in our own U.S. Constitution, we've made a commitment to equal protection of the laws. And the death penalty just really flies in the face of that concept of equal protection. So for that reason, additional reason, I think the death penalty also needs to be declared unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Professor Bessler.
Thanks for having me.
For our listeners who would like to learn more about the death penalty, you can visit the DPIC website at deathpenaltyinfo.org. And to make sure you never miss an episode of our podcast, you can subscribe to Discussions with DPIC on your podcast app of choice.